This is the Pearson EdXL International GCSE English as a Second Language Paper 2 Listening Test, January 2023. This test is in four parts, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the end of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all four parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen.
Part 1. Section A. In this section, you will hear five short extracts in which people are talking about zero-waste gift ideas. Read the list of gift ideas below, then listen to the extracts. For each question, 1 to 5, identify which gift, A to H, is being described by each speaker by marking a cross for the correct answer. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box, and then mark your new answer with a cross. Not all the gifts are described, and each may be used more than once. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Speaker 1. Give your friend or family member a tasty treat of things that you have made yourself, like homemade cakes, cookies, jams, chutneys, and sweets. It is a chance for you to show off your cooking skills. These can all be placed in a pretty box or basket, which they can use at home or at work. Speaker 2.
Shops selling used items have a reputation for selling shabby things. That, however, is not the case. From digital cameras at used electronic stores to designer clothes and hand-knit jumpers, you can pick up almost anything. You get a bargain, reduce your carbon footprint, and make your friend happy.
Speaker 3.
Live plants brighten up the home, especially when they are in an unusual container. They also help oxygen to flow around the house. You could give a cactus or a fern to a beginner. If your friend is an experienced plant lover and would like a challenge, then perhaps give them a bonsai tree.
Speaker 4.
Encourage your friend or family member to try to grow their own food. You could make an interesting collection of a variety of seeds and a book of instructions about how to grow your own food. Whether it's herbs, fruit, or vegetables, their hard work will pay off deliciously.
Speaker 5. Replace one of the worst plastic polluters with a reusable alternative. Get your friend a carrier made of strong cotton or canvas, which they can use again and again for their shopping. There are many on the market to choose from, and they are a must for a person who cares about the environment. Now, listen a second time and check your answers. Speaker 1. Give your friend or family member a tasty treat of things that you have made yourself, like homemade cakes, cookies, jams, chutneys, and sweets. It is a chance for you to show off your cooking skills. These can all be placed in a pretty box or basket, which they can use at home or at work. Speaker 2.
Shops selling used items have a reputation for selling shabby things. That, however, is not the case. From digital cameras at used electronic stores to designer clothes and hand-knit jumpers, you can pick up almost anything. You get a bargain, reduce your carbon footprint, and make your friend happy.
Speaker 3.
Live plants brighten up the home, especially when they are in an unusual container. They also help oxygen to flow around the house. You could give a cactus or a fern to a beginner. If your friend is an experienced plant lover and would like a challenge, then perhaps give them a bonsai tree.
Speaker 4.
Encourage your friend or family member to try to grow their own food. You could make an interesting collection of a variety of seeds and a book of instructions about how to grow your own food. Whether it's herbs, fruit, or vegetables, their hard work will pay off deliciously.
Speaker 5. Replace one of the worst plastic polluters with a reusable alternative. Get your friend a carrier made of strong cotton or canvas, which they can use again and again for their shopping. There are many on the market to choose from, and they are a must for a person who cares about the environment. That's the end of Part 1, Section A. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Section B. In this section, you will hear a person talking about an unusual birthday present. For questions 6 to 10, listen and answer the questions below. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Recently, I received an unusual birthday present. My friend gave me an ordinary jam jar that contained some white paste. There were separate instructions about how to bake a friendship cake. The instructions asked me to look after Herman, feed him when he gets hungry, and move him into a larger bowl when he starts to grow. For anyone who has no idea who or what Herman is, he is a type of cake. A friend gives you a jar of yeasty mix and instructions on when to add sugar and flour to it. After 10 days of feeding the mix with sugar, flour, and water, you divide the mixture into 4, give 3 jars to friends, and 1 portion you keep. To that portion, you add more flour, sugar, eggs, cinnamon, apples and sultanas, and then bake it in the oven. When you feel you want to bake another friendship cake, you make a mixture of flour, milk and sugar. Continue feeding and letting Herman grow. Give 3 portions of this mixture to yet more friends, and keep the rest for yourself to bake the cake. The name Herman was originally given to a sweet, spicy bread made by early American settlers. A mixture, known as a starter, made from flour, sugar, and water, was used to make cakes and bread. What was left of the starter would be shared with others in the community. Today, Many people think that a Hermann friendship cake is a luxury item rather than a necessity. Yet, thanks to various internet chat forums, they have become popular at a time when we are encouraged to waste less and share more. After all, gardeners will tell you that Hermann cake makers are only doing what they as gardeners have been doing for years, growing fruit and vegetables and passing surplus on to neighbours. Hermann friendship cakes have become a fun way of doing something that we have forgotten to do, to share food with our friends, rather than storing it in our freezers, or, worse still, throwing it away.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Recently, I received an unusual birthday present. My friend gave me an ordinary jam jar that contained some white paste. There were separate instructions about how to bake a friendship cake. The instructions asked me to look after Hermann, feed him when he gets hungry, and move him into a larger bowl when he starts to grow. For anyone who has no idea who or what Hermann is, he is a type of cake. A friend gives you a jar of yeasty mix and instructions on when to add sugar and flour to it. After 10 days of feeding the mix with sugar, flour, and water, you divide the mixture into four, give three jars to friends, and one portion you keep. To that portion you add more flour, sugar, eggs, cinnamon, apples and sultanas, and then bake it in the oven. When you feel you want to bake another friendship cake, you make a mixture of flour, milk and sugar. Continue feeding and letting Hermann grow. Give three portions of this mixture to yet more friends, and keep the rest for yourself to bake the cake. The name Hermann was originally given to a sweet, spicy bread made by early American settlers. A mixture, known as a starter, made from flour, sugar, and water, was used to make cakes and bread. What was left of the starter would be shared with others in the community. Today, many people think that a Hermann friendship cake is a luxury item rather than a necessity. Yet, thanks to various internet chat forums, they have become popular at a time when we are encouraged to waste less and share more. After all, gardeners will tell you that Hermann cake makers are only doing what they as gardeners have been doing for years, growing fruit and vegetables and passing surplus on to neighbours. Hermann friendship cakes have become a fun way of doing something that we have forgotten to do, to share food with our friends, rather than storing it in our freezers, or, worse still, throwing it away.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part two. In this part, you'll hear an extract from a podcast about cultures and traditions. For questions 11 to 18, listen and complete the notes. Write no more than three words for each answer. Questions 19 and 20 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
For hundreds, even thousands of years, humans have celebrated two special days during the year, the summer and winter solstices. The 2 days fall on the 20th of June and the 20th of December, respectively. Ancient calendars marked these 2 days as being very important. The summer solstice marks one of the turning points of the year. The days are getting shorter and the nights longer. It's a time to think of autumn, of changes in nature, and a time to start getting ready for the colder days ahead. Harvest and preparation for the winter months would follow the summer solstice. In the past, the summer solstice was used to organize calendars and was a marker to work out when to plant and then to harvest next year's crops. Today, people around the world celebrate the summer solstice with feasts, bonfires, picnics, and traditional songs and dances. In northern European countries, the summer solstice, or midsummer, is an occasion for different festivities. When the days are at their longest, people celebrate the summer and the richness of the earth. Bonfires are lit, people sing and dance around them and decorate their homes with wild flowers and tree branches. In some parts of the United States, modern versions of the festivals focus on environmental awareness and how to use natural sunlight as a source of energy. In today's urbanized parts of the world, it's an occasion to travel to the countryside and to reconnect with nature. According to Chinese tradition, the shortest shadow is on the day of the summer solstice, which makes it a particularly lucky day. In ancient China, the summer solstice was celebrated by honoring the earth, femininity, and the yin forces. It was complemented by the winter solstice that celebrated the heavens, masculinity, and the yang forces. The winter solstice has always been considered just as important as the summer solstice. Although winter is a season of darkness and cold, many cultures regarded it as a time to look forward to new beginnings, as well as to warmer and brighter days. Celebrations of the lighter days to come and of nature's cycle have been common throughout cultures with feasts, festivals, and holidays throughout the winter solstice. Even though it fell on the shortest day of the year, it was a cause for celebration because it marked the turning of the sun. This meant the days that followed would get longer. In ancient Rome, the winter solstice celebrations lasted for 7 days. During the time of the festival, the usual order of life in Rome was turned upside down. Wars were interrupted or postponed. Schools were closed, and slaves and servants were served by their masters. It was traditional to exchange gifts such as fruit, dolls, and candles. It was a time when grudges and arguments were forgotten. Today's Christian celebration of Christmas is thought to have its roots in ancient Roman solstice festivities. The exchange of gifts is an important feature of today's Christmas, just as it was in ancient Rome. Trees were considered important during solstice festivities. In northern Europe, trees were burned until nothing but ash remained. The ashes were collected and strewn over fields every night while the festivities lasted, hoping that they would protect seeds and plants. Many ancient traditions have been transformed into more modern celebrations. In northwest Pakistan, a festival which includes the winter solstice involves singing, chanting, torchlight processions, and festive eating. In Poland, it's thought that a tradition still seen at the family supper on the night before Christmas comes from an ancient solstice observance, which involves people showing forgiveness, welcoming strangers to their homes, and sharing their food with them.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
For hundreds, even thousands of years, humans have celebrated two special days during the year, the summer and winter solstices. The 2 days fall on the 20th of June and the 20th of December, respectively. Ancient calendars marked these 2 days as being very important. The summer solstice marks one of the turning points of the year. The days are getting shorter and the nights longer. It's a time to think of autumn, of changes in nature, and a time to start getting ready for the colder days ahead. Harvest and preparation for the winter months would follow the summer solstice. In the past, the summer solstice was used to organize calendars and was a marker to work out when to plant and then to harvest next year's crops. Today, people around the world celebrate the summer solstice with feasts, bonfires, picnics, and traditional songs and dances. In northern European countries, the summer solstice, or midsummer, is an occasion for different festivities. When the days are at their longest, people celebrate the summer and the richness of the earth. Bonfires are lit, people sing and dance around them and decorate their homes with wild flowers and tree branches. In some parts of the United States, modern versions of the festivals focus on environmental awareness and how to use natural sunlight as a source of energy. In today's urbanized parts of the world, it's an occasion to travel to the countryside and to reconnect with nature. According to Chinese tradition, the shortest shadow is on the day of the summer solstice, which makes it a particularly lucky day. In ancient China, the summer solstice was celebrated by honoring the earth, femininity, and the yin forces. It was complemented by the winter solstice that celebrated the heavens, masculinity, and the yang forces. The winter solstice has always been considered just as important as the summer solstice. Although winter is a season of darkness and cold, many cultures regarded it as a time to look forward to new beginnings, as well as to warmer and brighter days. Celebrations of the lighter days to come and of nature's cycle have been common throughout cultures with feasts, festivals, and holidays throughout the winter solstice. Even though it fell on the shortest day of the year, it was a cause for celebration because it marked the turning of the sun. This meant the days that followed would get longer. In ancient Rome, the winter solstice celebrations lasted for 7 days. During the time of the festival, the usual order of life in Rome was turned upside down. Wars were interrupted or postponed, schools were closed, and slaves and servants were served by their masters. It was traditional to exchange gifts such as fruit, dolls, and candles. It was a time when grudges and arguments were forgotten. Today's Christian celebration of Christmas is thought to have its roots in ancient Roman solstice festivities. The exchange of gifts is an important feature of today's Christmas, just as it was in ancient Rome. Trees were considered important during solstice festivities. In northern Europe, trees were burned until nothing but ash remained. The ashes were collected and strewn over fields every night while the festivities lasted, hoping that they would protect seeds and plants. Many ancient traditions have been transformed into more modern celebrations. In northwest Pakistan, a festival which includes the winter solstice involves singing, chanting, torchlight processions, and festive eating. In Poland, it's thought that a tradition still seen at the family supper on the night before Christmas comes from an ancient solstice observance, which involves people showing forgiveness, welcoming strangers to their homes, and sharing their food with them.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear an interview with a charity organiser in Uganda, Africa. For questions 21 to 25, listen and answer the questions. You do not need to write in full sentences. Questions 26 to 30 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark the new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Welcome to our programme. This week, it's about an unusual charity. For those of you who, like me, didn't know, coffee is Uganda's top-earning export crop. In today's programme, I'm going to talk about a new initiative launched by one of Britain's biggest coffee importers and its partner in Uganda. It's a project to help women who work on family-owned coffee farms in the region of Sippy Falls. It's an honour and pleasure to welcome to our programme the inspiration behind this initiative, Olivia Kishero. Welcome, Olivia.
Thank you. You are very kind. Our project is the result of the work and generosity of many people. It is called SWEEP. Sippy Women's Economic Empowerment Project. We are raising awareness about a special coffee called Webale, made by the local farmers in Sippy and sold in Britain.
Webale? In your language, that means thank you, doesn't it? What an unusual name for a coffee. Tell me, what's the project about?
Well, the name of the coffee is a way of saying thank you to the people who buy it, and so help us. More than 3.5 million families work in the coffee industry. Women not only work on the coffee farms, but also take on household chores and childcare responsibilities. On the farm, they are expected to help with planting and weeding, as well as picking the coffee beans. Few women own land or are actually involved in selling the coffee. I'm one of the lucky ones, as I run a successful coffee farm. I thought that if I can do it, be successful, and have a vision for a better future for me and my family, other women should also have the chance.
Ah, so this is where your project comes in, to help other women to be more independent. Will you tell me all about what you do?
You may not know this, but coffee has only one harvest a year. In the dry season, when there is no coffee, life can be hard. This means that an additional income is essential to the livelihoods of many women and their families. SWEEP provides sewing machines and tailoring training to all the women coffee farmers in the Sippy region. Tailoring is a practical skill that women can use to make clothes for their families and earn extra money by selling beautiful handmade clothes in local markets.
Wow, this is really fantastic. I think it's marvellous that they're given basic financial training on how to run a small business. So, any extra money that you earn, you can use to support your children and provide them with a good education. Your vision for the future is that women will no longer be dependent on just one coffee crop a year.
I really believe that this project will change the lives of mothers and wives. All the money will go straight to the family Those who earn money from tailoring invest all of it in their children and their education. They want their children to go to university and have other careers. If women are supported, then they can develop, have great ideas, and think positively about the future. After all, the women help the country's economy.
I would think that the women enjoy this challenge. They can work from home, and not only do they provide for their children, but they can sell the clothes. Tell me, is there a demand for the clothes they make?
Oh, yes. From simple skirts and tops to dresses. We love clothes. Every part of Uganda has its own traditional dress. For example, in central Uganda, it's common for women to wear a colourful long dress. Here in the east, in Sippy Falls, we don't have a traditional outfit, but rather a mix of different fashions. We all love bold, brightly coloured material, and it's bright, colourful clothing that we sell at the local markets. And it sells very well.
Hmm. Now, you told me that this project is open to all. I think that there must be a lot of interest among the women, am I right?
Oh yes, you certainly are. The women who take part in this project are anywhere between teenagers and over 60. We have grannies and their granddaughters learning side by side. It's really inclusive of all generations, as we're trying to create a healthier and happier family life.
Well, you appear committed to developing and investing in projects that will, in the end, create change for the better. I think it's all about family empowerment thanks to women's empowerment. Your emphasis on skills and training is surely the best way to help.
That's true. We have had other things in the past which I felt improved our lives and our children's lives. The sewing machine project is the latest. We have had a new medical centre built. Our local school has a pump which provides our children with clean drinking water. Children no longer get their drinking water from a stream a long way away. Families who had to rely on indoor open wood fires have been provided with biogas stoves, which means that there is no indoor air pollution. And now, mothers no longer have to walk miles to fetch wood, giving them more time for sewing.
Olivia, that was fascinating. Thank you so much for coming and telling us about SWEEP at Sippy Falls. Good luck with your sewing.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Welcome to our program. This week, it's about an unusual charity. For those of you who, like me, didn't know, coffee is Uganda's top-earning export crop. In today's programme, I'm going to talk about a new initiative launched by one of Britain's biggest coffee importers and its partner in Uganda. It's a project to help women who work on family-owned coffee farms in the region of Sippy Falls. It's an honour and pleasure to welcome to our programme the inspiration behind this initiative, Olivia Kishero. Welcome, Olivia.
Thank you. You are very kind. Our project is the result of the work and generosity of many people. It is called SWEEP, Sippy Women's Economic Empowerment Project. We are raising awareness about a special coffee called Webale, made by the local farmers in Sippy and sold in Britain.
Webale? In your language, that means thank you, doesn't it? What an unusual name for a coffee. Tell me, what's the project about?
Well, the name of the coffee is a way of saying thank you to the people who buy it and so help us. More than 3.5 million families work in the coffee industry. Women not only work on the coffee farms, but also take on household chores and childcare responsibilities. On the farm, they are expected to help with planting and weeding, as well as picking the coffee beans. Few women own land or are actually involved in selling the coffee. I'm one of the lucky ones, as I run a successful coffee farm. I thought that if I can do it, be successful, and have a vision for a better future for me and my family, other women should also have the chance.
Ah, so this is where your project comes in, to help other women to be more independent. Will you tell me all about what you do?
You may not know this, but coffee has only one harvest a year. In the dry season, when there is no coffee, life can be hard. This means that an additional income is essential to the livelihoods of many women and their families. Sweep provides sewing machines and tailoring training to all the women coffee farmers in the Sipi region. Tailoring is a practical skill that women can use to make clothes for their families and earn extra money by selling beautiful handmade clothes in local markets.
Wow, this is really fantastic. I think it's marvellous that they're given basic financial training on how to run a small business. So, any extra money that you earn, you can use to support your children and provide them with a good education. Your vision for the future is that women will no longer be dependent on just one coffee crop a year.
I really believe that this project will change the lives of mothers and wives. All the money will go straight to the family. Those who earn money from tailoring invest all of it in their children and their education. They want their children to go to university and have other careers. If women are supported, then they can develop, have great ideas, and think positively about the future. After all, the women help the country's economy.
I would think that the women enjoy this challenge. They can work from home, and not only do they provide for their children, but they can sell the clothes. Tell me, is there a demand for the clothes they make?
Oh, yes. From simple skirts and tops to dresses. We love clothes. Every part of Uganda has its own traditional dress. For example, in central Uganda, it's common for women to wear a colourful long dress. Here in the east, in Sipi Falls, we don't have a traditional outfit, but rather a mix of different fashions. We all love bold, brightly coloured material, and it's bright, colourful clothing that we sell at the local markets. And it sells very well.
Hmm. Now, you told me that this project is open to all. I think that there must be a lot of interest among the women, am I right?
Oh yes, you certainly are. The women who take part in this project are anywhere between teenagers and over 60. We have grannies and their granddaughters learning side by side. It's really inclusive of all generations, as we're trying to create a healthier and happier family life.
Well, you appear committed to developing and investing in projects that will, in the end, create change for the better. I think it's all about family empowerment thanks to women's empowerment. Your emphasis on skills and training is surely the best way to help.
That's true. We have had other things in the past which I felt improved our lives and our children's lives. The sewing machine project is the latest. We have had a new medical centre built. Our local school has a pump which provides our children with clean drinking water. Children no longer get their drinking water from a stream a long way away. Families who had to rely on indoor open wood fires have been provided with biogas stoves, which means that there is no indoor air pollution. And now, mothers no longer have to walk miles to fetch wood, giving them more time for sewing.
Olivia, that was fascinating. Thank you so much for coming and telling us about Sweep at Sipi Falls. Good luck with your sewing.
That's the end of part 3. Now turn to part 4. Part 4. In this part, you will hear an extract from a podcast about some of the benefits of driving an electric car. For questions 31 to 33 and 38 to 40, listen and complete the sentences below. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. For questions 34 to 37, complete the table. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hi, I'm Gavin Thomas, and I want to tell you about an experiment that I took part in recently. Some people say that within 20 years, some think even sooner, we shall be driving electric cars. Many governments are beginning to encourage people to buy electric cars, and there is even talk of banning the production of petrol or diesel cars in the next 10 years. Our lives will certainly change. Without a doubt, we will still be concerned about the cost of driving a car, electric or conventional, and be as occupied with rising electricity costs as we are now about the constant increases in petrol or diesel prices. However, our lives will change for the better. The air we breathe will be much cleaner, and we might also drive differently, less aggressively, and feel more relaxed by the quietness of an easy-to-drive electric car. A leading car manufacturer decided to conduct an experiment to see how drivers reacted behind the wheel of an electric car. They chose a sample of about 50 drivers in different age groups and with different levels of experience. I was one of these drivers. We were to drive a petrol or diesel car first and then change to an electric one. The test took place along a 5-mile stretch of a main London road in the mid-afternoon with the usual bad-tempered drivers and busy London traffic. For both cars, we were fitted with special wristbands that measured our pulse, special in-car cameras registered our facial expressions and eye movements. The steering wheels were fitted with a force-sensitive monitor to see how tightly we gripped the steering wheel. Both cars had a way of measuring how harshly or smoothly we accelerated or braked and slowed down. What became clear from the experiment was that all of us drivers were calmer, more efficient, and more aware of what was happening on the road when behind the steering wheel of the electric car. Perhaps the only slightly negative result was that some of us were overall less confident with the controls. Many of those who took part in the test had not driven an electric car before. Some found it strange that there was only one pedal, the accelerator, but no foot brake. Some took a while to get used to the fact that as soon as they lifted their foot off the accelerator, the car's brakes kicked in immediately. Although this was a relatively small experiment, it raised some interesting questions. What does this mean to us as a nation of drivers in 20 years' time? Will there be less road rage? Will we, as drivers, become better at anticipating what other drivers and other road users, like cyclists, are doing? I discussed these results with the president of the Automobile Association, who said, "To me, there is no doubt that driving an electric car changes the way we drive. despite the fact that most electric cars perform well and can be as powerful as a diesel or petrol car, we tend to drive them more slowly and more carefully. Firstly, we are calmer within ourselves in the electric car. There is no roar with the quieter engine to excite us. We are more aware that pedestrians can't hear us, so we slow down to ensure that we can stop if someone steps out in front of us. As an automatic car, it will be easier to drive as people will have less to negotiate in terms of gear change and braking. Being calm and peaceful might lead to less road rage. Yet, when I spoke to the research director of the driver training organisation RoadSmart, he was more cautious. It is important to remember that the basic principles of safe driving will not change. You will still have to observe what's going on around you, anticipate hazards, and deal with them. Hazards will be pretty much the same whether driving an electric vehicle or a conventional one. Most of what we do at the moment will still apply. However, we're going to have to change some of our training to reflect the differences in driving an electric car from a conventional one. As we change to electric cars, we will have to take into account things like having only a single pedal. When you've got an electric car, the way you brake and accelerate is different. At first, drivers tend to get distracted by this, which can be potentially dangerous. That's where I think that the retraining of drivers before they go out on their own would be a great help. We are considering going into partnership with some car manufacturers and to provide short courses as part of the sales package. There are all kinds of approaches we need to consider to ensure safety on our roads. I don't think we will suddenly become better, more considerate drivers because we are driving an electric car. Unfortunately, if drivers are aggressive towards others who use the road, be it other drivers, cyclists, or pedestrians, that's not going to change depending on the vehicle they are actually driving. Calmness has to come from within, although a quieter, stress-free car can have some influence. The electric revolution and change are coming. The brave new world is nearly here. Let's embrace it with calm and serenity.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hi, I'm Gavin Thomas, and I want to tell you about an experiment that I took part in recently. Some people say that within 20 years, some think even sooner, we shall be driving electric cars. Many governments are beginning to encourage people to buy electric cars, and there is even talk of banning the production of petrol or diesel cars in the next 10 years. Our lives will certainly change. Without a doubt, we will still be concerned about the cost of driving a car, electric or conventional, and be as occupied with rising electricity costs as we are now about the constant increases in petrol or diesel prices. However, our lives will change for the better. The air we breathe will be much cleaner, and we might also drive differently, less aggressively, and feel more relaxed by the quietness of an easy-to-drive electric car. A leading car manufacturer decided to conduct an experiment to see how drivers reacted behind the wheel of an electric car. They chose a sample of about 50 drivers in different age groups and with different levels of experience. I was one of these drivers. We were to drive a petrol or diesel car first and then change to an electric one. The test took place along a 5-mile stretch of a main London road in the mid-afternoon with the usual bad-tempered drivers and busy London traffic. For both cars, we were fitted with special wristbands that measured our pulse, special in-car cameras registered our facial expressions and eye movements. The steering wheels were fitted with a force-sensitive monitor to see how tightly we gripped the steering wheel. Both cars had a way of measuring how harshly or smoothly we accelerated or braked and slowed down. What became clear from the experiment was that all of us drivers were calmer, more efficient, and more aware of what was happening on the road when behind the steering wheel of the electric car. Perhaps the only slightly negative result was that some of us were overall less confident with the controls. Many of those who took part in the test had not driven an electric car before. Some found it strange that there was only one pedal, the accelerator, but no foot brake. Some took a while to get used to the fact that as soon as they lifted their foot off the accelerator, the car's brakes kicked in immediately. Although this was a relatively small experiment, it raised some interesting questions. What does this mean to us as a nation of drivers in 20 years' time? Will there be less road rage? Will we, as drivers, become better at anticipating what other drivers and other road users, like cyclists, are doing? I discussed these results with the president of the Automobile Association, who said, "To me, there is no doubt that driving an electric car changes the way we drive. Despite the fact that most electric cars perform well and can be as powerful as a diesel or petrol car, we tend to drive them more slowly and more carefully. Firstly, we are calmer within ourselves in the electric car. There is no roar with the quieter engine to excite us. We are more aware that pedestrians can't hear us, so we slow down to ensure that we can stop if someone steps out in front of us. As an automatic car, it will be easier to drive as people will have less to negotiate in terms of gear change and braking. Being calm and peaceful might lead to less road rage." Yet, when I spoke to the research director of the driver training organization RoadSmart, he was more cautious. "It is important to remember that the basic principles of safe driving will not change. You will still have to observe what's going on around you, anticipate hazards, and deal with them. Hazards will be pretty much the same whether driving an electric vehicle or a conventional one. Most of what we do at the moment will still apply. However, we're going to have to change some of our training to reflect the differences in driving an electric car from a conventional one. As we change to electric cars, we will have to take into account things like having only a single pedal. When you've got an electric car, the way you brake and accelerate is different. At first, drivers tend to get distracted by this, which can be potentially dangerous. That's where I think that the retraining of drivers before they go out on their own would be a great help. We are considering going into partnership with some car manufacturers and to provide short courses as part of the sales package. There are all kinds of approaches we need to consider to ensure safety on our roads. I don't think we will suddenly become better, more considerate drivers because we are driving an electric car. Unfortunately, if drivers are aggressive towards others who use the road, be it other drivers, cyclists, or pedestrians, that's not going to change depending on the vehicle they are actually driving. Calmness has to come from within, although a quieter, stress-free car can have some influence. The electric revolution and change are coming. The brave new world is nearly here. Let's embrace it with calm and serenity.
That is the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklet to be collected. Thank you, and good luck.